is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, Friday, June 28th. And you're listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Becky Johnson, your guest hostess, and we'll be hearing from Bathrobes Pierre himself, some interviews that were conducted over the course of the past week. But to start off, I'm going to play for you some of the discussion that followed the May 31st injunction court date, in which the City of Santa Cruz achieved an injunction against the protest down at City Hall. And so listen in so you'll have some insight as to what happened.
So we're outside the courtroom at 9:30 after the judge has sleazed out and passed part of the injunction. The mayor is sort of checking out the scene for rats, no doubt. And here's Tim Rinker. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
So,
have you got the battery in?
John, any comments?
No comments.
You feel you got everything you wanted?
Yeah, I think the judge, examined the issues fairly and struck a proper balance.
So you're not disappointed that you didn't get the trespass part of the injunction that you requested?
No, and he made it clear that if there were hours of operation, that's something the city could enforce, because he referenced park hours and things of that nature, that council hasn't done that.
Any plans to establish a city closing law around city council?
You have to talk to the council members about that.
Tend to bring it to the city council.
So you will be establishing possibly closing hours, Mayor Rodkin?
We'll bring it to the council. I can't establish it. I
have the that will be an initiative on your part.
Yes.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
What's going on now, Robert?
No.
What's going on now is they're going to try to close down City Hall by legislative fiat. By city council decree. But they can't.
What do you mean, we can't camp there?
No. They're trying to pass a law. It'll take a month. I'm talking to
Wilhelmina Prill.
And Wilhelmina, you're saying that in Redding it's even worse than here?
It's worse in Redding. After 9 o'clock, you can't even sleep in your car in their parking lot.
Well, you still can't do that here. It's illegal here to do that as well. After 11 o'clock, actually. So I guess
at
you got
9 there.
Yeah, you got a 2 hours more. So you better grab those Z's early on.
Right, when the sun is out.
Right.
So then we go to court for the citations on the 14th.
Yes, and of course there'll be more than 200 camping tickets going to court, since the city refuses to do any kind of compromise, but is insisting on enforcing the no sleeping ban. That's what it wants. No sleep for the homeless after 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
That's the ruling.
Well, in New York, people sleep in the day and walk the street at night in New York City.
That could become the rule here in Santa Cruz.
Can I have that in New York City too? No camping law?
This is Ned. You're one of the defendants.
There's no place to camp.
Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. What about how are the laws over there?
Huh?
How are the laws over there?
Laws? I didn't get involved. It's too many homeless people.
Yeah, I know.
It's too crazy.
Yeah, it is.
It's Jim Costner in his Free Mumia Abu Jamal t-shirt. Victoria and Abby.
Can I make a quick statement?
Sure, go ahead, Jim.
Why isn't GE on trial? Why aren't the capitalists who run this country on trial? Why aren't the MOVE murderers on trial? Why aren't the Black Panther murderers on trial?
Why aren't
the police on trial? Why isn't the mayor on trial? Why isn't the system that offs people throughout the world on trial, but yet people who protest sleeping, why are they on trial? And why is it that people who are protesting aren't clear enough the fact that this was going to go down anyways?
Questions that you have to put to the judges and to the protesters, I suppose, to get their answers.
None of these laws changed, and that means that we're still going to have to pay the fines, right?
Yes, there are thousands of dollars of fines that are, tens of thousands of dollars of fines that are coming up around this issue. And David Bobet is talking.
You can't make orders on the assumption that people are going to be reasonable, because that's not what's happening here.
And that's why we get into these tiny details about whether people can have a blanket wrapped around themselves. And Judge Stevens kept saying, well, we're assuming a certain amount of common sense.
Right.
What he's not assuming is a certain amount of bad faith and a certain amount of attention to any way that they can find to cite people, which is what's going on. If someone has a sleeping bag with them because they're carrying it home, they could be cited. If someone's wrapped in a blanket because it's 40 degrees out, they could be cited. If someone's wide awake but someone they don't like, they can be cited. It is totally arbitrary and capricious, and this gives room to allow for
and
them.
What's more, there are 60 blankets in lockup right now, and people have been cited.
So it's not just a speculative argument.
And on a humane level, if you take away people's bedding, the people who have no place else to sleep, and it drops down to 40 degrees out, they can die.
They actually have in the past. They have died. That's part of the issues when we started this whole thing.
They can die of exposure. Some of the people who are on the streets who are not involved with the vigil have an alcohol problem. Alcohol lowers the body's resistance. It lowers the body temperature. People are more likely to freeze to death. You have people with illnesses out on the street.
So what's your next step?
We have to discuss that.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a meeting.
Possibly a sleep out.
Attorney client privilege there.
The next step is legally would be the hearing on the permanent injunction, but no date has been set. What's the process?
Well, the process is we'll get a trial date. There'll be a trial. And unlike this proceeding in which the judge looks at a lot of paper and makes a decision based on the paper, they'll actually have to listen to witnesses testify as to what's going on. So the credibility of the witnesses becomes an issue at the trial, whereas it's still an issue now, but it's hard to assess credibility based on declarations that are written by lawyers. But when people get in and they actually get on the stand and they testify and you can see their demeanor, then that means that the judge has an opportunity. Well, you may want to give deference to particular witnesses, but he may change his mind when he hears the witnesses on the stand.
One of the difficulties we had, and the defense had in this situation, is we had several, actually at least three or four very credible witnesses, including counsel persons, and including the gardener, who was one of the main witnesses in declaration against us, have stated that it has been their experience that it's exactly opposite from what Mayor Ratkin has said in terms of being disorderly and a general blight. And these people have refused to come forward basically based upon the fact that hiding behind a conflict of interest, saying that the city attorney obviously represents them as city council persons, and refusing to step forward as a human being and a citizen to say that, in fact, the area has been kept neat and orderly, that they haven't seen any rats, that there has been no blockage of any passageway. So that's we have a quote right now from the gardener, who has told one of our protesters that, in fact, I guess you guys weren't the problem.
David Bouvet, could you comment about that Steve Belcher's declaration was submitted very late, and that he said that there were, that the ticketing was taking place not just to the protesters, and that Stevens accepted that over the testimony of many other declarations?
Belcher submitted a very generalized declaration in which he discussed the fact that the ordinance, when it was passed, was not targeting homeless people, which I accept on its face. The ordinance was passed many years ago, but that's not the question in this case. The question in this case is how is the ordinance being applied, not whether it was passed for some insidious purpose, but it is being applied against certain people only. That's a separate issue. So the judge kind of merged those, I thought, when he was discussing it. The other question is that Belcher's declaration says that, well, we only ticket people when we get complaints. Okay, well, the complaints that they're getting at City Hall appear to be the complaints of Mayor Ratkin. So this is a case of bootstrapping, if I ever heard one. I mean, the people that we are having this disagreement with about policy are making a complaint about us disagreeing with their policy, and that supports an injunction against us. I think that's really not right.
Well, to my opinion, Steve Belcher is lying through his teeth, because I know for a fact I've received three tickets out there camping and in areas which there's no way somebody could have seen me or called, but since the cops knew me, they came out there and they gave me tickets. And I requested if there was a call made, and they said no.
All of the defense counsel has, in fact, witnessed this personally, I believe, the selective ticketing that people have been allowed to not only sleep elsewhere, but set up
true encampments with with hair dryers and tents, basically. So it's quite clear.
People that's on the street, there's people that's also that's ambitious and that's running from persecution. And for an example, when I was traveling in California, I ended in the border of Mexico in San Diego, right? And basically, I'm for libraries. I think there should be more free, liberal libraries where you can go and study and read whatever you want to read. But they have a sign in there that if you have a sleeping bag, you can't enter the library in San Diego, the Central Library. And then they have co-op places where you have to pay $50 a week to stay. You know, you share a large room with other people, but they don't, you know, you can't enter their public library with a sleeping bag, but they're not willing to give you a clean mattress. Gotcha. The mattress.
And you're listening to Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides from Jail. This is your hostess, Becky Johnson. And what you've been listening to have been some interviews that were conducted after the May 31st court hearing outside Judge Stevens' court, where there was the City Hall sleepers protest had challenged the injunction that the City Council had taken out in an attempt to end the protest. Next, you'll hear an interview that Robert arranged from jail with Rick on June 23rd. Oh, good.
Hello.
Hello. Hi. What's your name?
Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah, I just did an interview on the San Francisco Liberation Radio.
Oh, well, we're doing Free Radio Santa Cruz here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You want to say anything to our Free Radio audience? About
the... I'm away over San Quentin to do a little bit of time. Not that long. I'll be out by Christmas. It's not that bad.
Well, you're certainly... adjusted, huh?
Hmm, you know, what are you going to do, sit and cry about it?
Well, I appreciate that positive attitude of yours.
You know.
But it's my view that there are way, way, way too many people in prison at public cost and lack of any positive result, both for the prisoner or their family.
Well, the prison system is self-efficient. You can understand it's the largest industry in the state of California.
Right. To me, that's an obscene reality that we need lots of public awareness and comment on and agitation to change.
Sure.
I know. Either bend our leaders' ears or get new leaders, you know?
Sure. I guess there's everyone to get involved in some way, you know? Go and register to vote. I know it sounds, you know, old hat and all that stuff, but I believe that everybody does register and votes, mm-hmm. gets heard, that things can change.
Mm-hmm.
March, you know.
I'm in favor of adopting a prisoner. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's still more people outside of jail than in. So if everybody adopted a prisoner and just sort of advocated for them, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I've been doing it. I have a couple of them. Robert's not my first prisoner. But,
Robert's truly a political prisoner, you know. I'm here for my own behaviors. I mean, to be honest, I committed a crime, you know.
You did.
It's here as a crime in some ways, and, you know, the system looks at it that way.
You mean you didn't give away free bagels?
No, I didn't give away free bagels. You know, I stole something. And, you know, it's a crime. And so I have to kind of bear my own responsibility there.
So it was property?
It was property.
You stole property.
Right.
What was the value of the property you stole?
$35.
$35. Okay, and how long have you been in jail?
Well, I've already served about 11 months.
About a month?
I've already served about 11 months.
11 months so far?
A few months at a time.
Oh, 11 months total?
Yeah.
Okay, 11 months is almost a year.
Uh-huh.
And in the state of California, it costs $20,000 to $30,000 to keep an inmate in prison for 1 year.
Sure.
Let's say that it's only cost the taxpayers $22,000 to keep you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anyone that's, you know, $22,000 outraged over a $35 crime.
Well, it gets even better because, see, I'm leaving a few days to go to San Quentin. I'll be there for maybe 6 or 7 months, and I'll come out on parole. While on parole, they can violate me and give me another 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I can end up doing all total about 5 or 6 years for this crime.
Oh, and then the parole board, they all draw salaries. They don't work for free.
Of course.
You know, it's job security to these guys. You know, they don't want you to be rehabilitated or better or whatever that is, you know.
I'm getting the word here that I think Robert needs to talk to you again.
Yeah. Nice talking to you, Rick.
Nice talking to you.
Okay.
Keep it safe.
This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hello, Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides coming to you from jail. Next, Robert and I spoke about the Social Services Subcommittee meeting, which took place on Tuesday, June 25th. Mike knows.
Mike knows. What happened at the Social Services Subcommittee?
Oh, well, I got there at 8:15, and I got in a fight with Mike Rodkin at 8:16.
Oh, really?
So it started out really... No, I didn't record the fight. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, but I did record the meeting. And then I made a comment, you know, I made a statement or something in the middle of it. And Jane Yokoyama, as soon as I started talking, she gets up and leaves the room.
Oh, really?
And then she came back in just as I was finishing. And Scott Kennedy's over there digging through papers and stuff and totally ignoring me. Mike, I'll give Mike credit. You know, he did look at me. He looked like he was listening. You know, he gave me time to speak and everything, and did respond a little bit. You know, with his typical dodges. I asked him how much the injunction was costing, and.
My alarm was busted, the boss chewed me out, and everybody's disgusted, cause it's one of those days, it's just one of those days. I lost one of my socks in the dryer, I can't find my wallet, and my hair is on fire, just one of those days, it's just one of those days. I just wrapped my Cadillac around a tree, a big swarm of locusts. Covered me with ants and I spilled toxic waste on my brand new pants. Just one of those days. Ever have one of those days? The bank called me up and told me I'm overdrawn. Some freaks are burning crosses out on my front lawn. And I can't believe it, all the Cheetos are gone. And just one of those days. Just one of those days. Darn Russian spies, boldly
And that was Weird Al Yankovic with One of Those Days. And indeed, we're having one of those days. So now I'll continue with some more interviews with Robert Norskon from Jail. And now here's some tape from the Social Services Subcommittee meeting that took place on Tuesday, June 25th. And with Mike Grotkin, myself, Scott Kennedy, among others. And the subject was Community House.
So, go find out.
Okay, Community House. First, let's take any public comments that people have about the issue. Let me make clear what's in front of us today. The Community House is looking for authorization for the construction to proceed, which basically has to do with the city releasing some additional funds that we hold, some of it CDBG money that we've already generally appropriated, which I guess is in effect in a contingency fund waiting for us to say, go ahead, you can have the money or to release it. There are city staff discussions currently going on about the home money that we have coming to us and what that's eligible for, and trying to realign a whole bunch of stuff in the city budget. Current funding that we funded out of CDBG money, current things that we funded out of social service money. I don't even know what else in the budget, maybe stuff in the general budget having to do with the planning department. But to look at the overall home money, they're going to come back to the council with some recommendations about the way that money can be spent. But before anything really can proceed with the Community House much further, there's some stuff going on with private monies and so forth. But before more city money can be released, this committee really needs to make some decision. First today, do we believe the construction budget is, and this is a recommendation of the council that's meeting this afternoon on this item. Do we think that the construction budget is clear enough and supportable in terms of what their plans are? Does it cover the things that need to be covered? Are there holes in this that the city doesn't understand in terms of what the construction costs are likely to be to actually construct this project?
Now that Mike Rodkin's explained it all, I know you all understand everything perfectly. I continue with the tape.
Then they make a proposal which, looking, and again, they are not clear what proposal they're putting forward, just a range of proposals to show us that if the construction is complete, there is something that this is going to be useful for. And that is either a organized program that will have staff people and so forth in a recovery center, basically, or a transitional housing program that will allow people to transition out of homelessness into regular permanent affordable housing. Or if they don't get that together because monies don't come forward, they're would be counting on for that to happen, then there would be a fallback position, which is basically this could be very affordable, very inexpensive housing provided for people and basically run and managed as a low-income housing project, in effect. They've already got some commitments from the John Stewart Company that they would be willing to run, although they have not signed a contract, but that group would be willing to manage this property, in effect, as a low-income housing project. Which would be the fallback position if some of the operating funds are not forthcoming. So the real question that's in front of us that we need to recommend, make a clear recommendation to the council, is whether we think the construction budget is well organized, makes sense, has holes in it, problems, et cetera. Are we prepared to recommend that they proceed with construction and that the city release the monies that we've already appropriated and any additional money that's available through home and other sources to allow the actual construction of the project? And of course, you can't separate this out, the issue of whether either the transitional program or the housing program itself makes sense as a housing project, makes sense as a project. You have to have enough confidence in some one of these three alternatives we're looking at that we think it makes sense to construct the thing. If you don't think it makes sense, we obviously wouldn't want to prove it going any further. So that's the issue. So first, to hear from any members of the public who want to talk to us, I know Becky's here for that, about the project, any thoughts they've got about it, anything you want to share.
Well, as you know, I'm in favor of community house in a way, in that we have a need for transitional housing. But the controversy, of course, lies in the fact that there is so much money involved and so few people are affected, and that there are perhaps other priorities that the city is not adequately addressing, i.e. Legal places for homeless people to sleep. And one of the first questions I want to ask is, since I have three city council members here, all of you who voted for the injunction, what is the additional cost to the city for the injunction when you that was taken out against the protest here at City Hall for legal fees, court costs, secretaries, filing fees, copying costs, costs of service, and cost of enforcement.
Zero, because it's included in the city's general legal budget. Our legal contract with the attorneys doesn't cost us anything.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that, and I thought that that might be a disingenuous comment in the sense that certainly that there are many, many hours of very expensive, high-paid people that have been gone to work to create this injunction, and they're taking away from other work that they might have been done, might have done with that time and funds and costs, and that it's probably more like, you know, $20,000-$30,000 range.
Well, the only an honest answer to your question is you might want to speculate on whether the city attorney's taking a bath on this, and it was really just doing a lot of work is coming out of the hiding of people like he works with. But the city cost to taxpayers has not changed one iota by this, because basically the city attorney does works in a general contract for the city, and this work is included. We are billed for certain kinds of litigation work that they do for us, and this is not included in that kind of stuff, so there's no additional cost. And I understand they make it a moral point here that they better spend their time doing things elsewise and so forth. So I'll be happy to stipulate to that. But the answer is no money to the taxpayers for that.
I mean, there's a certain percentage of the legal budget of the city that is being used up by this injunction.
It doesn't work that way. We have a contract that requires them to serve the city's legal needs, and they don't charge us by the case for the work they do for us. So, I mean, you're unhappy with that situation, but that's what's happening.
Well, yeah, naturally, you know, I have a lot of concerns about the injunction and even the motivation for it, that it was basically brought out because of claims of health and safety violations caused by the protest here at City Hall, and yet none of those were proved, and yet courts gave you the injunction anyway. It's pretty clear that the whole purpose of the injunction was that you're tired of this protest of homeless people who are asking for a legal place to sleep. Scott?
Yeah, Mike. He's actually showing me. I have to, because of another demand at Research Center, I have to leave here right at 9:30. So I propose that you limit oral communication so that we have time to deal with the agenda rather than a stream of consciousness.
Okay, so
whatever you want to bring up on there,
yeah.
Mine.
Yeah, 2 points.
I'm looking at this sheet here and of all the extra items, and they're for staff and case managers, and many of these projects I certainly approve of, but I just don't.
What you're listening to are the comments that I made at the Social Services Subcommittee meeting regarding community house funding and homeless issues in general with Mayor Mike Rotkin, Scott Kennedy, and Jane Yokoyama. However, as I said earlier in this broadcast, Jane left at the beginning of my speaking and didn't come back until I was finished, so she really was not there. I'll continue with these comments.
Is on the one hand providing services for homeless people, and on the other hand criminalizing them and throwing them in jail. It seems that the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing here. And, you know, community house, it's unfortunate that it has replaced the Coral Street open air shelter, which did provide a legal place for 200 people to sleep without being criminalized. I know you're aware of the purpose of the protest out there, which is petitioning you to end this sleeping ban and to end the ban against covering up with blankets, and is not to end the camping ban altogether, as has been misreported in the newspaper. I just would hope that the City Council, I'm sorry that Jane had to leave here, I would hope that City Council members would in the future look for the very realistic alternative of setting up some sort of a campground for homeless people where that is not a clean and sober facility. According to Karen Gillette, any clean and sober facility costs about 25 times as much to operate as a non clean and sober facility just because of the logistics of having to search people as they come and go. Community house is such a facility, and that is one of the reasons why the price tag is so high and serves so few.
Well, I think there's kind of steps or tiers to this thing. First, you know, is I think that we move ahead with the construction as soon as possible, that we should approve that, because whether it's transitional housing or permanent low-income housing, either way, it's in the community's interest to get the construction going. And I think the budget here answers that, the questions that I have about the construction budget. So that would be the first part of it. Secondly, you know, I tried this week to get
to ask a question that was asked at the last meeting, and that is for the people who are in the community house program who are on, say, SSI or disability or unemployment, how much would they personally be required to contribute to the program in order to participate?
The way it's set up, it's kind of like sliding scale, but it's set up to be no more than a third of their income. No more than a third of their income. No matter what that is.
Under HUD, it's always 30%.
Mm-hmm.
HUD, HUD regulations restrict you from paying more than 30%.
Mm-hmm. So it would be up to 30%, and so do you have that written down, you know, like a chart or something?
That's part of when they do their budget calculation, that's how they determine the... Again, there's two things we're looking at, depending on where this goes. Partly would be for if they run the program, then they're talking about charging people to be in this program up to a third of their income. Mm-hmm. So if you pick this, about 30%, it's up to a third, 33%.
Mm-hmm. And what percentage of the people do you anticipate would be in the program that would be have some form of income when they come in?
We're not sure. We think it would be as low as maybe 10 to 15% when they come in. But part of what we're going to do during the program is assist them in finding work and making money.
And then
so
that would be adjusted upward
as their income increases, as they produce income.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll also have the opportunity to work credits to gain money credit for work at the facilities as well. It can go toward the money that they need to pay for their fees, which will reduce the requirement of money to make any place else, if you catch my drift. So they'll get to keep more of the money that they make other places if they choose to work in the program as well. But it's still going to be no more than a third. We're going to help them find work.
Just one other clarification, and that is that on the one-third formula is actually directed to rent, and we're not actually charging rent, per se. In the transitional housing, most of the income will go to fees for services and food and utilities. There will be virtually no cost directed per se towards rent. And it's actually the one-third formula is HUD's formula that pertains only to housing. So notwithstanding that is the case, we're nonetheless likewise using that as our formula to limit the amount that people would pay for the aggregate of their services, including non-rent, non-housing things.
That's an example of the kind of thing that I still have a concern about in terms of you should take more, to be blunt. But we're not approving that part of the program today and stuff. And my sense is if you're providing room, board, and services for people, I don't know any reason that you wouldn't take two-thirds of the money if they're on SSI or they have some source of income. Why you would only take a third makes no sense to me. If you could take the extra money and give them better program support to really put them in a better position to get out of the problem that they're having and move on to be able to become self-sufficient. But that's not a question that's in front of us today, so I'm not troubled by that difference about how we...
And likewise, we may find... as we move along. That's one of the reasons, you know, Becky is asking, do we have this locked in? We don't have that locked in. We do have it stated as a principle in the program element, but we don't think it's sensible, Mike, for the kinds of reasons that you're suggesting, that we lock that in and make that part of the social contract or a legally binding contract. We have to maintain flexibility.
You've got a number of different programs here. One is the startup budget, and there's one if it goes up with more people. And if you can't get that together and the funding's not forthcoming for the social program, then back to the issue of a low-income housing project, which still has casework or social work needs, like any low-income housing project has to be in a decent place for people to live. So all those questions, I think, definitely need to be addressed by some review.
Right.
I'm just concerned that all of the people that come through Community House are treated in the same fashion, that there's not... one special deal cut for one person, another person.
It will not be arbitrary.
And the more the clearer you can be at the start, the more you can avoid that in the future.
Understood.
Okay, I'm going to call the question.
I just to piggyback on what you just said, I in fact wouldn't say take more of their money, but I would actually say maybe encourage them as part of their program to put that money into savings so they can make first and last month rent when they get out of the housing.
And that last speaker was Jane Yokoyama, who had come back from her trip to the bathroom, as it turned out. And now here's how the subcommittee voted.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion, which is, again, to recommend the construction budget to the council, to direct staff to investigate what it might cost to get a peer review of the operating part of the program, say aye.
As either a transitional
as
a low-income project.
Yeah, to look at those would be a range of options. Say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? That carries unanimously. That's a recommendation of the council. That'll be discussed on this afternoon's council agenda.
Hi.
You got Rob's address?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Say, I thought that was kind of interesting, that this new twist that I guess it's if you don't get the sufficient funding for the community house as it is as a transitional house, that they have kind of like a fallback position to turn it into low-income housing, or at least is that kind of like a stopgap measure?
City, sure, what the city wanted to know is that we're talking about, the city is saying to us, we're talking about giving you a couple hundred thousand dollars. And we want to know that if you are not able to run it as with this operating procedure and so forth for as a transitional housing, are we going to end up building a place for a lot of people to, you know, for a lot of trouble? No, is it going to be ours and there's nothing going to be done with it and it's going to be a place that we have to take over and spend a lot of money and don't know how to do and don't want to do and so forth? Or can it operate in some other way? And so they asked us to put together budgets for... if we operate it as a low-income housing place.
Can I get a copy of that?
Sure.
Do you have one?
I made out a whole set just for you.
Oh. Well, I haven't had my morning coffee, so I'm a little slow this morning.
There you go.
I'm a little under stress. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's all in there, and for them it's just smart, because then they know that it's going to operate successfully no matter what, and then they wanted to make sure that before they released that kind of money, that something was going to operate successfully there.
I see, but the chances of that is probably pretty low. You're pretty sure you're going to go ahead with community house as you've been planning for years. I kind of figured that as much.
But they want to go, well, look, just in case... What's going to happen then? And so you'll see.
And that last speaker was Frank Puselek, who's the new director of Community House, a program which has not opened yet. And last I heard was destined to open in November with 5 people at the site of the old Coral Street Open Air Shelter. What you're going to hear now is some interview on the street. Hi, I'm outside of Crown Books here, and I'm with 2 homeless people. Hi, what's your name?
I'm Green.
Oh, Green. How long have you been homeless?
5 years.
And what you were telling me a little earlier about why you're homeless. Could you tell our... radio listeners?
It's basically, I was passed through the system. They passed me through school not wanting to teach me because they didn't know how to teach me. They don't know how to teach people with learning disabilities like myself. Like, I'm dyslexic and hyperkinetic. And the thing is, they don't know how to teach these kids, so they put them in special classes as special ed and hope that the problem will just go away. Their problem child, they just need to be away from the other kids, controlled. As long as they're behaving, they'll pass them. And that's not right. They're not teaching the kids. They're not actually giving them knowledge. With me, I can't even write. And that's not cool. I'm 20 years old, I should be able to write.
So the school system's really failed you and left you unprepared to make a living.
Exactly. I'm just stuck in a rock and a hard place, you know. I don't know what to do.
So where do you sleep at night?
Here, there, everywhere. I'd rather not say.
Do you have to kind of hide out?
Sometimes. Sometimes I just don't really care.
And what's your name? You can give a nickname if you'd like. How long have you been homeless?
She's been out here for not that long, but she she's been out here long enough to see it. It's hard.
Uh-huh.
It's real hard. She'd rather not speak. You know, a lot of people don't like speaking, you know, especially when a lot of people are going to be heard.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, all 10 of our listeners.
Yeah, you got to excuse me. I'm eating at the moment.
Uh-huh. Well, people got to eat. People got to sleep. People got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I usually end up feeding people before I eat myself. I end up fucking... sorry, excuse my language.
That's all right. This is a free radio. We it's different rules.
Oh, okay.
We're not under FCC rules.
Oh.
So you can say fuck.
Oh, well, I end up taking care of people better than I take care of myself is not good, but the thing is, a lot of people out here I consider family. I look after people like family, and that's what people do for me out here. It's like a big family. We are very friendly people, but the thing is, you just don't hurt anybody in our family. That's it.
So your friend here who is opting to not speak, and I respect that. She's 14 years old and was kicked out for your family. I'm not going to say your name. Yeah, your family asked you. They didn't. You left home because of you know, a difficult family situation, and you've been out on the streets for a month now. Okay, you'll have to answer for her because she doesn't want to speak.
Yeah, she said something like that around a month. A little over, actually, I think.
Have you, found any help from, say, the Homeless Resource Community Center or any other organization, or maybe gone down to get food stamps at Emmeline?
I went and got food stamps. It's just, I can probably get other things. It's just so much hassle because I don't really know where to start. And a lot of times they don't help you through it.
How about the Above the Line program that is for teenagers?
Don't know it. Don't know it. I'm not a teenager anymore.
Uh-huh. Well, your friend here is, and
yeah,
she's 14.
She is, yeah, but I don't know about it.
Uh-huh. So maybe... might want to check into that. I'm not sure how they can help you, but seems like at 14 years old, you shouldn't be living on the streets. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm screaming. That's it. That's what I'm screaming. No, who should be living on the streets? Nobody. Food and shelter should be free. Food and shelter and medicine should be free and wherever, and everything else should be paid for if you want it. But food and shelter and medicine should be free for everybody.
Thanks a lot, Green, and thank you, Mystery Girl. This is 96.3 FM Free Radio, Santa Cruz. And you're listening to Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides from Jail. And I'm your hostess, Becky Johnson. And now, for a little Diana Ross with Funny How Time Slips Away.
Well, hello there. My, it's been a long, long time. Now
that's been my sin. Gotta go now. I guess that I'll see you
call last night from Stephen DiCinzo.
Oh, yeah. Richard, right?
Well, it's for Richard, exactly. But Richard wasn't here when he called, so I couldn't resist having a little chat with him. And I did not interview him, you know, for the radio. But I did ask him, you know, why are you so, you know, so find so much humor in bashing homeless people? You know, the cartoon, which you probably haven't seen, that came out yesterday, where he was basically, for, you know, describing that the farmer's market was, you know, being plagued by pests.
Yeah, the last panel was
right, in very unflattering terms. And he talked with me for a long time, a good 20 minutes.
Wow, you should have recorded it.
And
ranted on anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
demoralizing, or did you find it interesting?
Oh, I suppose you could look at it and say it's demoralizing because, you know, here, you know, he's doing these editorial cartoons weekly, he has a fairly big audience, and yet he personally is just full of misinformation and negative myths about homeless people, and you know that you know, he says, well, Santa Cruz, we have way more than our share of homeless people, and I tried to dispute him, you know, because you know, nationwide, homelessness is 1-3%.
And we talked about that.
And
I know the figure. And what did he say?
He just ignored me.
The Rodkin syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well, I hope you feel too frustrated.
And you know, it was the, you know, we shouldn't provide services for homeless people because that will just invite homeless people from all over the country and the world to come to our doors. And that homeless people are lazy and they don't want to work, and that they're all a bunch of alcoholics and drug addicts, and you know, I work hard for my money, and you know, and people are homeless because of their own personal failings and bad choices that they've made. And you know, when I tried to say Steve, you know, it was not easy to get in a word edgewise, I might say. Steve, the experts say that homelessness is caused by low wages and high cost of housing.
Uh-huh.
Neither of which is a personal problem.
Yeah, no. Did he hear anything you said?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Then I asked him about your cartoon. The one that.
Another rant.
Yeah, yeah. It was the Robert Norris rant.
He was off and ranting.
Yeah. Yeah, he says, Robert Norris isn't for the homeless. Robert Norris is just for about Robert Norris. That's all Robert Norris is about. And
I've heard that before.
Yeah. I asked him, what's the humor of joking about jailhouse rape.
He said, oh, you have to have been there to have known it.
He was not at all funny.
Right.
You know, in this 20 minutes, there was, you know, for someone who is a comic artist.
I don't know if cartoon writers are particularly funny when they talk, particularly people who lampoon. Because he's a caricaturist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he's a caricaturist. I like it when he caricatures Coonerty and Kennedy. He occasionally does that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he obviously is.
Why are you picking on, you know, the bottom portion of our society, the people that, you know, have the least and are the most fragile circumstances, and, you know, why, you know, your power would be to pick on the powerful that are misusing it.
He did say he did pick on the powerful.
Yeah, he did. He did say that. Mm-hmm.
And occasionally he does. You know, that's true. Usually he ignores the homeless. But the fact that he, you know, chooses when he not doesn't ignore them to savagely caricature and misrepresent them and slander them is, you know, puts him more in the Buckley tradition than in the Oliphant tradition.
Yeah, he's kind of like more like Rush Limbaugh or something.
I think you handle yourself very, very diplomatically. Sounds like you're the expert of...
He called me a bleeding heart liberal.
Ooh, a bleeding heart liberal.
You bleeding heart liberals. And
bleeding heart.
And I said, well, you know, I probably fit that description.
You
know
me for a while.
Yeah. You know, I said, Stephen, don't you realize that every person is precious? Every person is valuable?
Oh, dear.
There are no throwaways. And he was just about barfing, I think.
Don't barf on me.
Don't barf on me, Stephen DeCenzo.
Don't barf on me. So.
Well, anyway, that was kind of funny.
If you'd like to write Robert Norris Kahn in jail, send all correspondence to one prisoner number 1472209, and he's in CJ8-FPOD, F as in Frank, POD, P-O-D, -41B, and he's at 425 7th Street, San Francisco, California, 94103. Yeah, so send him magic cards. He really wants them. Hear about it now.
So I played magic this morning for the first time with the whole deck arrived of cards.
Really?
So you can send in like a bunch of cards. Apparently that works.
Wow.
Tell Alex to send in a bunch of white cards or a bunch of green cards. I got a bunch of black cards now. I need a bunch of white cards and some white lands. Maybe no, it wasn't Pete who sent those cards. You didn't get
no, I haven't sent any of those yet.
Oh, okay.
I have them here, but I haven't sent them.
Huh. Yeah. Well, we're hoping that things will improve here. That this will become a magic showcase.
Okay, so you want white cards and what?
Well, it could be white, green, blue, or red. Doesn't matter. Anything but black. And then and the lands that go with the white cards. With white, it's plain. With green, it's forest. Just make sure you send a mixture of the two.
Oh, okay.
When you do, if you do, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. I think this can be arranged. I'm kind of bummed they won't let me do a videotape the interview tomorrow.
You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, 96.3 FM on Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Becky Johnson, your hostess for the moment, and... pretty soon you'll be hearing from Mad Mike the Wonder Dog, who will be taking over shortly. Now you'll hear a conversation that Robert and I had about the Metro article. It was in the news section, where they were talking about the island of Cuervo Gold or some such expensive, nutty marketing toy from the real big drug pushers that we've got to worry about. But that's another story. So here's some of the comments that Robert had to make.
And what might that word be exactly? Quote, that the only rules are, there are no rules, says Mueller.
This is Texas City Hall sleeper.
Oh, sort of like those who bed down at our city hall? Well, not exactly, says the shot glass sophist. It's an attitude. You participate in life to the fullest, clarifies Mueller. However, don't plan on pulling together a convention of rules-snubbing, life-affirming booze hounds and booking a charter down to the New Republic just yet. I don't need to finish this about the volleyball tournament.
With respect to this exciting...
Yeah, well, you know...
About the liquor, about the quality of her story, about her usual...
Oh, no, I want, you know... you to comment about the references to the City Hall Sleeper protest. It's only one reference, but, you know.
96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre's broadcast.